My name is Aaron Marcus. You're listening to Type Radio. Now we're talking.
Type Radio FM.
Now we're talking.
So are you disappointed now that we're not even further?
Well, we are much further in some ways, and I could be disappointed and I could be pleased. I know that whenever you try to push computer technology, it gets very, very frustrating. Computers never do what you want them to do. But if you relax a little and try to discover what is possible in addition to what I want to do, then there's kind of a compromise, and you can you can collaborate, so to speak, with technology to create and discover things and maybe find things that you had no idea you could do, but they're very interesting. You might think of something and realize, oh, I never imagined I could do that, and now I've discovered this, and it's very exciting, and I actually appreciate what I can do. We are so much further than the systems that I used when I was doing that work, or when I started my company to do user interface design, information visualization, document design, etc. For example, when we started our research for DARPA, the U.S. Defense Department's Advanced Research Project Agency, to discover and design new, better, improved forms for the appearance of the C programming language so that every programmer in the world might be able to look at beautiful documents. You have here in the bookstore so many typographically beautiful, luscious, delicious, fantastic designs from all kinds of sources from all over the world. Pity the poor programmers who look at the dreck, the terrible things that they have to look at 8 hours a day and try to read them, try to understand if there are mistakes, try to read comments in English or French or whatever language, in Finnish, and to know how to understand and do things. That's a little bit like reading a very short part of a novel or some news from the newspaper. And all of it has been terrible, terrible, terrible typography, terrible layout. And that's what they've suffered with for so long. When we were trying to improve that, we were connecting state-of-the-art laser printers. Maybe you don't even remember such times or know such times. We could not even get Helvetica or Times Roman, two of the most widely used fonts since the beginning of typographic photo typesetting and especially machine-generated text. We could hardly get any laser printers with any fonts at all, other than simple typewriter font or line printer kinds of fonts. Mm. And keep in mind, realize that for a laser printer, you know how much one laser printer cost then? $25,000. And imagine, now a laser printer costs, I don't know.
$50?
Or maybe, let's say, certainly $250.
Okay, yeah, well, okay. Laser printer would be...
So that from $25,000 down to $250, and many, many, many fonts. Then just a few were available. And the computer, a kind of workstation with the graphics editing software together, it cost about $85,000 for one device with some software that was somewhat capable, but not the most capable. So for any graphic designer to sit and work with a computer in 1982, we had to pay more than $100,000. Does a normal graphic designer have then $100,000? I don't know how much that would be equivalent to now, maybe If it were real estate, it would be $1 million.
Yeah.
But the point was, we could only do that because we were had the benefit of working with a research project that would buy that equipment for us. That was the official research project. On the other hand, I also had to do regular design work and correspondence with clients and so on. And I did that on an Atari game machine that cost a few hundreds of dollars with a simple line printer. And we had this such a strange dichotomy between the simplest little word processor that we were sneaking into a game machine to use, the Atari 1200, the Atari 600, I think, and these very expensive workstations that were good, but they were very primitive and very expensive. So think about what we have been able to achieve now in 20, 25, 30 years. It's such a difference. I mean, the computing power of a cell phone is probably more than what most of those machines had. In fact, I...
Did you foresee this development then?
Well, I certainly...
Did you envision it in your head, in your mind?
If you had asked me, well, if you had asked me if I could envision the kind of society or developments of the mobile phone and the PDA, I suppose I might have guessed that everything would have shrunk. I couldn't say exactly how much, but I do know that that we worked on three-dimensional user interfaces in 1988, somewhere between 85 and 90. During that time, we were, well, at 1985, when we ended that first research project, we were proposing already to design user interfaces for multimedia workstations. We imagined they would be rather large because that's all that could be made at the time. But we were already thinking about the world of multimedia, which didn't actually come into being until about 1992 with the emergence of CD-ROMs on PCs, where you could, you know, macromedia. And all, I remember the inventor of the company that became Macromedia I think it was called VideoWorks, the first inventor of that software, who later sold it, and then it became Macromedia. I remember using his software and talking with him about the world of the future of multimedia in the 1979, 80, and 81, I was talking with some technology and software developers who were saying, you know, eventually you'll be able to go into a room and you won't know whether where you are, because the imagery that can be delivered to you will be so convincing, you might think you're in New York, but you're actually in Los Angeles or Helsinki. That is, you can deliver full media power, full fidelity to create artificial environments of typography, symbolism, graphics, and sound, and smell. Well, I finally noticed at the last conference that I went to in Las Vegas a few months ago that there are people now selling a kind of a harness or a yoke, you would call it, a kind of thing you put around your shoulders. And it has little containers of special perfumes that are computer controlled so that you can have the proper smell in addition to the visual and sound experience.
And depending on the, sorry? For example, and its usage?
Well, yeah. And for better or worse, it's used by the military in training. Mm. They want to give the people who are being trained to fight as real a simulation as possible, because they have found from their studies that if people are not experiencing real fear, they know that it's a game, they won't learn. Right. The lessons will not be embedded in their memory as automatic responses to danger or other situations.
But still, they still need like the substance to produce the smell. Do you think like the smell itself will actually become like virtual? You have some like, connection in the brain, which
yes. I mean, most hardcore science fiction people believe that that's not too far away, mm-hmm. and the most an interesting science fiction novel around that theme is one of the early writers of cyberpunk science fiction by the name of Victor Vinge, V-I-N-G-E, who wrote a book called True Names, and I recommend it highly if you're interested in that.
Typeradio.org, broadcasting from Helsinki, Itaipai 2005.